My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Lisa the Painful, which is a role-playing game developed and published by Dingaling Productions for the PC in 2014.
Yeah, and this is our premium episode for the month, which means that everybody's here on this part. And if you want to hear the entire episode, the plot-by-plot beats and the jokes and more of the soundtrack, you will want to be a patron at $5 a month at patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
Yeah, and to sweeten the pot, you don't just get the full version of this episode, you get the full version of all of the previous premium episodes as well.
We're the podcast that dares to ask, how sweet can a pot be? And then just jam more sweet into that pot. It's full to bursting.
It's basically just sugar.
Yeah, it is just a sweet, sweet pot. That you get at this Patreon. It's the this is a cool pick.
It is. This is a game that I enjoy. That does not come without caveats, though. And this is a general warning because the game is very unpleasant and it deals with very serious topics, possibly too lightly. And by talking about them, we're going to be bringing up things like abuse, sexual assault, addiction, all manner of traumas. So understand that we are going into this. This is a comedy game, but that comedy is dark.
It's a dark comedy game. It's also both.
Yes.
You know, like, I like this game. I'm glad I played it. This is just me getting out in Front Street. I've been tweeting about it, or blue skying about it.
Yeah.
I've been bluting about it. I like this game. I'm glad I played it. I don't like how it marries those two things. And I always feel self-conscious when I use this language, but, like, you know, probably something I should discuss with a therapist. As a survivor of neglect and addict parents, I hate the worldview of this game. And you know, I don't feel seen by it. It doesn't ring true to me.
Okay.
You know, it is, there's not only those things, the jokes are all very, very funny. And then it presents a world in which the cycle of abuse is inescapable. And if you are an abuser, you will become an abuser.
Yeah.
No matter what. And I mean, you know, if you've listened to me in the margins at any point during this this endeavor of the podcast, you might know why I don't like that. You know, as a thing that's just like, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
That's a shitty worldview. So we'll get into all that stuff, but it's both. And I don't want to tiptoe around, like, again, last warning to get off, if just even talking about this stuff, a prominent verb that is talked about in this game is rape.
Yes.
It's not said all the time, but there is a heavy implication of rape through the whole game for one of the characters, and then it is deployed more specifically sometimes.
Yes.
And we just got to talk about it because it's the game.
Yes.
So I really want to get that warning out there because some people just, like, don't want to hear that. You know, like, I understand people who just are uncomforted in general.
Yeah.
By it. I don't think it's without merit at all in how it handles those things. And I think that the stuff around it, like, it is a very, very funny video game.
Yep.
Very funny. Is worth talking about as well.
Yeah.
You know, but just want everyone to know.
Yeah.
Gotta know.
And also us talking about this and, you know, anything we say positive about kind of the way that it uses, you know, plays with this very live ammo. That is not us saying, like, oh, you have to like this or you don't have a sense of humor if you don't laugh at it. Like, everybody is you know, it is perfectly acceptable to bow and say like, hey, no, this actually sucks. You guys are, you know, wrong about that. Right. Yeah.
Like an interesting question I had in my head, and I think there is an answer to this. This is not me trying to gotcha you. Mm-hmm. I promise. When I was playing this, was like, why this and not Fear and Hunger?
Yeah.
Right. Like that we ducked out of that game for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
That this does. I think
differentiate it.
Yeah, there's a difference, but it's not a night and day difference. Mm-hmm. This is playing with a lot of the same places, a lot of the same kind of ammo. Mm-hmm. You know, so that is a fair criticism. We'll try to, in explaining this, explain why even the not perfect but slightly better touch
mm-hmm.
this does with it is better than just instantly deploying it in Fear and Hunger.
Yeah.
You know, basically right out the gate in mm-hmm. a context-free, you yeah. know, scenario.
And as a status effect.
Yeah. 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 You yeah. know, there's kind of a status effect here, too, with and, the guy, the companion you get a little bit.
Yeah. yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. There's mm-hmm. so much to fucking talk about. It's kind of a perfect WoW game because there's a lot to talk about in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yep.
So you play as Brad Armstrong. You're this washed up former martial arts instructor who is going on this quest to try and find your adoptive daughter who has been kidnapped. Or so you mm-hmm. think in this post-apocalyptic land of Alathe.
Yep. It's the world, you
yes.
know, just renamed, presumed to be America, mm-hmm. Based on, you know, the cultural conventions. The world suffered a calamity known as the White Flash, and this got rid of all the women mm-hmm. in the world. Plausibly, there's a little bit of deniability around that, which we'll talk about. And a very addictive drug called Joy kind of has permeated the land that is turned this into like a Mad Max kind of thing.
Yeah.
It is full of raiders, these warlords and gangs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of the rough setup. There's a lot of shade to the way that is expressed, but let's talk mechanics first. Part of the reason that I picked this was kind of a contrast to classic style console RPGs, right? You know,
yes.
this is a turn-based RPG. That's how combat is expressed. And there are ways that is different. But one of the primary things that, you know, changes the perspective on this is a literal change in perspective. This is a 2D side-scrolling RPG made yes. in RPG Maker, I believe.
Yes.
But everything is arranged from a side-scrolling perspective with these aesthetics that are taking lots of cues from Earthbound.
Yes, this is in the Earthbound-like
mm-hmm.
Genre with your Undertales and your Yumanicky.
Yes.
Yeah, those kind of things
mm-hmm.
Here. And it's really interesting to do this after Dragon Quest because there are a lot of things that answer specific issues that I have
mm-hmm.
with console RPGs. Like, it doesn't avoid all of them, but it does do a lot. You know, it actually evolves on the spectrum, which is cool to see.
Yes.
The biggest issue, like, this is a thing that is frustrating. I don't know a way around this.
Mm-hmm.
The side-scrolling is a neat novelty. There are a couple of platforming segments that are mm-hmm. legitimately pretty fun.
Yep.
I find it very hard to keep a mental map of this place,
mm-hmm.
Personally.
Yeah.
You know, everything kind of looks a little bit anonymous. They're separated by color swaths a lot of the time, but the geometry are all hills, ropes, and caves.
Yes.
And any given screen. And there are three fast travel points.
Mm-hmm.
So from any of those, I just ended up spending a lot of time walking in the wrong direction, not remembering where a specific landmark was, going to the end of a cave, that being the wrong cave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, this is something where mileage is going to vary because that was not my experience with this either time that I played it, particularly because of the way. So you have those three fast travel points, but each of those is a hub and each of the spokes that goes off is actually quite short. And it is mostly just walk through this and experience the scene and then come back is the way that I experienced it. But I can see how you run into the Goonies 2 problem or the Friday the 13th, where you're walking up and down So you're going into the doors and like trying to keep like a 3D map of like the way these faces are represented and related.
Like almost parallax.
Yeah.
You know, zones. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, I didn't know where something would be. So there is, if you don't know what to do, there is some backtracking that'll be involved when you're exploring. Yeah. The spokes that you go down tend to be where they put random encounters. Mm-hmm. Which they generally avoid in the game, which is to be lauded. They don't get rid of them entirely.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a walking back and forth hallways fighting, you know, snakes and guys in the dark.
Yeah.
Element to this that kind of bugged me that I would have cut. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't think it would have been hurt by having a map. I understand why thematically they didn't like it, but like there's technology to have a piece of paper and a pencil in this world. You know, make Terry the only one who could do it.
Yes.
You know, do something like that. Like, you could still keep the themes and have a map, I think.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, even if it's not a map to show where things are, a map that shows where you have been and what was there would be really cool.
Oh, yeah. Or, like, signs outside the caves. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of ways around this. One of my central kind of, like, nitpicks with this is it feels like they were trying to make this world very harsh and then mechanically underline that, which is, to be lauded, that is a cool thing. But they hit every single switch you can. Losing party members in your sleep, whether you can't do anything about it, is, I don't know that that's necessarily, like, there are better ways that the game will enforce harshness and ways that feel less good, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
But in general, I found this map very confusing. I'd be curious if people write in about this, whether I am alone in this, because that this could be, you know, it didn't bug you. This could be my own brain for sure.
I can see it. So, like, don't feel like you're a space alien for bringing this up.
No. I want to take a survey of people and figure out how many of them are space aliens. And how many, you know. I'm just curious as to how universal it is.
Yes. Yeah. So for combat, every party is built around Brad, your old bald beardy, who you play as. He himself has kind of unique mechanics. There are a couple of other players who have this, or characters who have this. But Brad fights by dialing in these combinations. So you press the Armstrong style button, and then you press the face buttons to enter attacks. And each of these attacks do things individually. But if you press the right ones for a particular round, it will trigger a special attack that does more damage and often comes with special effects.
It's Grandia.
Yes.
And the individual, this ends up playing into the addiction mechanic very well, where your individual attacks might get debuffed, but your special attacks don't.
Yes.
There are different kinds of character types. There are also a lot of party members in this. You can recruit up to 30 party members. They kind of fall into different categories of play styles, but there's a pretty wide variety. You need this many characters because you will lose characters.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes through your own inaction or fault, sometimes not. So this is a function of giving you reserves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of them also are martial artists, like Brad. They do dial-in combos. Some of them have a standard kind of mana pool, which gets refilled. And then others, my favorite mechanic that they have is this thing called TP, which charges up each turn. You can affect it through items, but you start at a minimum in the battle. So it's kind of like a renewable, almost like an action point economy. So there's MP, dial a combo, and the combos do take mana as well, SP, to do those. And then TP characters.
Yeah. And you want to design your party because all of them are different from each other, and they leverage status effects in different ways, both buffs and debuffs on the enemies. This is pretty important. Turn denial is a huge deal, both figuring out how to cope with it when it is coming your way, and also trying to find ways to inflict it on the enemies. So tripping, scaring, stunning, all of these, in addition to reducing the reducing their offense, reducing their chance to hit, and in addition to damage over time stuff, status effects really matter. You build your team around them.
Yeah, it's there are an absurd number of status effects in the game as well. So you get a really wide variety of them. And that is a subversion of typical console RPG tropes. They matter. They're important. You will lose without utilizing them.
Yes.
Consumables are also very important. Very early on, Act 1, it is entirely about firebombs. You can gather, basically. That is your only attack all. thing for a long time.
Yeah.
You can also put healing items in these kind of things. Healing items are potent and rare there. And then you can juice people's SP and TP. That way TP is juiced by booze. So a character can get the drunk status or go into battles with more action points, essentially, if they are drunk.
Yes. Yeah. And restore SP with Coca-Cola Cola.
Yes.
It won't hurt if you throw it at somebody because it's a soft drink.
Yeah.
I promise the humor is better than that.
it's much better than that. There's a lot of jokes in this until there's a very funny point at the end where it's like last joke in the game. and it's like, oh, this is like things are getting pretty serious, but that's kind of funny. And then it's like, oh, you know, and then the ending happened. So
So kind of rounding out this trifecta of things that are important for the improvement of the standard console RPG battle system, something we mentioned, random battles are kind of de-emphasized in this. Oftentimes you're going to run into people on the screen. Either you will see them coming or they are part of challenges related to these platforms.
Yeah. There are still random battles in those spoke areas, as we mentioned, and a lot of these may as well be like a guy will just pop out of nowhere and attack you, or somebody will be in your way. You have no choice but to fight them.
Yeah.
Like, I like that most of the fights are not random. I still think there are probably too many fights in this, even if they are better, you know, than typical.
It's a step in the right direction. Yeah.
It's 100% a step in the right direction. Like, this, you know, we talked about in Dragon Quest when it was doing kind of neat things, and like, this gets a step. You know, this game is like, you know, 5 or 6 steps ahead of that. Like, it's doing a lot of things that I would love to see become standardized. Most of my issues with this are tonal and story-wise, not mechanical.
Yes. So we talked about the number of characters being important because characters can die permanently. This happens with bosses, specifically the game's kind of a signature boss, these joy mutants, you know, people who have overdosed on these blue pills, joy, and turn into these awesome fleshy monstrosities. I love the design on these. They're all different.
Yes.
There's an art gallery of almost
every enemy, actually.
Yes.
There are almost no repeated character models in this, which is really admirable and cool.
Yeah. But these joy mutants, they're more like walls than anything. They're expressed as battles and expressed as boss fights. But you've got to whittle down their incredibly large HP pools while they mostly cry and scream. They will do attacks, and some of their attacks can be fatal, not just taking down all of your HP and knocking a character out, but biting people's heads off, snapping their necks, things like that.
Yes. Joy, you know, it's not an overdose thing. This just happens with joy, regardless of how much you take, which ends up being a plot point in the game. This section, this way of losing people, I don't mind that much. Because it emphasizes that turn denial, you know, reducing enemies' chance to hit, things like that. What I have a little bit more of a frustration with is party members getting kidnapped in your sleep. This is a good idea. And if they get kidnapped, you might be able to get them back from a quest. The quest is always the same. You go to a gang and they ask you for money. If you say, if this were a quest, you'd be able to fight them or pay them. If you say you're going to fight them, they kill your party member, then you fight them. Yeah. So if you just happen not to have enough money, that person is gone, regardless of how much investment you've done in them or anything. There's nothing you can do about it except for reload to save. Yeah. I don't love that. You know, again, it's bleak, but you don't have to hit every single breaker for bleak on this. If you could fight your way back, I would like this just fine. This is part of a lot of other fun things that can happen in your sleep. Like, your stuff can get stolen. Sometimes you get gifts. Sometimes a guy farts on your head.
You get the stinky status effect, which raises your evasion. Like,
yeah, it's a good status effect. All that stuff is cute and good. The warlord's kidnapping you. I think this can only happen once per act. There's a different game for each act. And they ask for increasing amounts of money.
And sometimes, like, the more morally upright characters will just leave as well.
You can put people off, and that I don't mind either, because that makes sense.
This is in addition to, at several points in the game, you're asked to make these sacrifices. I think a couple of times it's, hey, sacrifice this party member or give up all of your items or your money, which in this game is pornography. or the more sadistic ones, there's a character who specifically is trying to torment you to get revenge on you, who will say like, hey, this character or your arm.
Yes. So you can lose your arms in this. Mm-hmm. I like that too. You know, losing your arms, it does change since you're doing dialect combos. Some of those buttons correspond to your fist. Those are off the table now.
Yeah.
You know, that is a cool idea with this. Yeah. We got to talk about a little bit about the money thing. It's specifically pornography. It's magazines. Yes. And this crossed over to being very funny to me.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're just the value of 100 porn magazines. Like, they cannot be reused.
Yep.
I really like them as a consumable. Uh-huh. Like, man, you are not getting anything else out of that magazine.
It goes to, like, you know, like we've talked about this before. Just a sign on some stuff on the corner that says used up pornography.
Yeah.
Like, how do you deplete this?
I mean, it's when I was younger, you'd have like one porno magazine and you get sick of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, eventually, but it's not instant, you know, and mm-hmm. just like, what will you do with, like, you know, we need 500 magazines. It's like, holy shit. Yeah. It's a very funny little choice.
Yes.
There.
Yeah.
One of the balancing factors in the game, I'm not using these guys because I thought this was too hard to work around, mm-hmm. Was that Brad is automatically this, but other characters have joy addiction. Mm-hmm. They're addicted to joy. This means that they will randomly go in and out of withdrawal. Mm-hmm. When they're in withdrawal, their defense is really bad, their evasion, their aim, and their regular attacks will do next to no damage.
Right.
Very specifically, this doesn't affect your special attack meter, which is a kindness. It means Brad can be useful since he's locked in your party. Basically, all my joy addicts went to the Russian roulette hole for money.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't feel like dealing with it. You do not get enough joy to make this. That is a break in case of emergency. Mm-hmm. Item the whole game.
Yeah.
I think like you it's a full heal. It makes you very powerful and takes you off of withdrawal. But it is not something you're going to have a lot of. You're not managing it like blood in the Crimson Court in Darkest Dungeon, where there's an unlimited supply. Like, there's just some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you are rolling with characters who have joy addiction, it does give you more of a reason to go after the joy mutants, even ones that, you know, do not otherwise have rewards. Because when you kill them, they're basically joy pinatas. There's also a character who is very invested in making sure you have a lot of it. And for me, it was worth managing this. So for this playthrough, I tried to make it as hard on myself as possible without using the definitive editions pain mode. Yeah. So I did, joyless, in order to get the like proper ending or the epilogue that explains some more stuff. And also just to see what it was like. That just means you don't give Brad joy. If you're just giving it to an occasional party member, like Fly Minetti or whatever, somebody who's otherwise incredibly powerful, it is enough of a difference.
Yeah.
So, it's just up to you whether you want to manage that or if you want to take a slightly substandard party, and roll them, you know, without managing that.
Yeah. It's very, withdrawal kick in. Felt very random, and the feel bads of it kicking in at a critical moment.
Oh yeah,
to me were I just didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It also felt cool to like beat a very difficult fight with three of my guys and withdraw.
Yeah.
So you know, it just depends like how much you're looking for, like a challenge, right?
Yeah. One of my we'll get to this at the very end. One of my nitpicks is that the ending, you do get some like weird sci-fi epilogue stuff if you're joyless, but it doesn't change what happens to Brad,
right?
For such a big sacrifice. I'm not saying it's going to sound, people are going to think that I just want this to have a happy ending, and I hope that I've engendered enough trust among the audience to know that I do like ambiguous or, you know, bleak stories, and I'm not just looking for like a tender frog house kind of thing out of this. It's just that kind of sacrifice should come with something.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird that it just comes with an unrelated scene to me. So there are a lot of different areas you'll move through, a lot of individual scenes. When it's not just hills and caves, there are kind of interesting biomes.
Mm-hmm.
And these set pieces and things are largely grounds for comedy. For gags, there are a lot of jokes in this. down to the concepts of the set pieces and just in the text.
Yeah. And even just like particular gangs that rule a particular place, you know, yes. You get the banana splits and what have you.
Yeah. They all have funny names. This is something I mentioned in Blue Sky as well. This is like Aquid dialogue. Like this is, you know, people, if you like the idea of people being named something like Hot Rod Thunderhawk, this is your game.
Yeah, everybody has a great outdoor fight name on Volope, yes. Or you know, the Latino Health Crisis, or Perfect Ron Sipes.
Yes, yeah, everything is like that.
Yeah,
you know, which I like. I think is funny. It's just it's worth noting what you're signing up for.
Yes,
in terms of that. Yeah.
Several towns, small settlements, and just a guy who walks around with a dresser on his back, you know, where you can buy stuff, lots of opportunities to buy and earn special equipment. This can make a big difference, but also know that, this can be lost, with, either some of the sacrifices or with particular characters
or things being stolen from you in the night.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that's the big thing. You know, inns, there are very few of them. If you sleep at them, you pay, but you're safe. Otherwise, there are campfires. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is added in the Definitive Edition are campfire conversations as well. So choosing a campfire, which has this additional risk, also can give you more story content for your companions.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And those scenes are good. It leans into the characters who otherwise, you know, don't get a lot of dialogue. Yeah.
Yeah. I did, the Nern one made me want to kill myself.
I thought that was so good.
I wanted to die. It's funny, but man, I was just like, stop. I know that's the point, but it was, you know,
And then at the end when he says, I really don't feel like you're respecting my time.
Yeah. I don't go to, it's rude to go to sleep when someone's talking to you. He's a dick.
One of the lines we're getting here too is like how much you're okay with a game trolling you. I'm fine with it in a game that is about trolling you.
It's nonstop, right? So like your mileage of how funny that is going to depend, right? Like the first time they did a very long rope thing, I was a little bit, you know, I was happier with it than the second long rope that they did. Things like that.
Yeah.
You know, like it's funny, like there's like a certain kind of like impish game dev thing.
Yeah.
Where like sometimes the joke is just like, what if this took a long time? Like they literally do the Earthbound, can you stand still for a long time? There are things like that I think are a little weak sauce, just because they've been done before. Like that was literally done in Earthbound. You know, it's not that funny to do it now.
Yeah.
I think. But yeah, it's if you are acclimated to that, and if that's your appeal, if you're, you know, you like being told fuck you as a thing, this does it in funny, smart ways.
Yes.
I guess is a way to put it.
Yeah. Are there any other mechanical things that I forgot?
I feel like there are. One thing, this is about the basic loop of the game, but it's mechanical, but it's also kind of exploratory and stuff. I found, and I'd be curious to see if you think this is true as well, this is a game that felt balanced around and designed around being a very completionist Hoover vacuum. Until I started really looking for hidden things constantly, I was very behind the curve and was not finding items, you know, like reasonable upgrades for things, accessory slots and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, that ended up being, because the game is rigorous, like you really do have to search in every single nook and cranny, both to find people and to get those items.
Yeah.
Which to me like inverts a little bit of what you can do with that, where like it feels special because you found a place rather than it feeling kind of mandatory to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I got a little bit fatigued. Like this is not a very long game, but I got a little bit fatigued like pushing up the edge of every cave to see if it was a hidden wall, you know, things like that. Like I get it, but at the same time, it felt a little bit, it felt like a bad feel requiring it to me or more or less requiring it. Like I know you can always Lobos it, you know, like you can always not do that stuff, but I didn't have when I just played through naturally, I had a false start in this game where I was like, I don't like the choices I made. I'm gonna start over. And I hadn't found anything. Like I hadn't found any accessories. I didn't find any, I barely found any healing stuff. And then I played through it again, like really digging into stuff and did better.
Yeah.
You know, I have like kind of mixed feelings about that as a game design thing, I guess.
I wonder if I'm just naturally more Hoovery in playing these than you are. because I did not feel especially like I was going to great ends to get that stuff. I always felt like I was on the edge of privation, but it was never insurmountable, is the thing. Additionally, and this leads into a point, there's a lot of missable stuff in this. Like, there are things that I missed that, having played this twice, I didn't even realize were in the game, notwithstanding like optional stuff that is in the definitive edition, right? So like, if we don't talk about your favorite character or like your favorite gag getting those characters, that's because like, I just didn't see it until I was like looking at a wiki.
We're not going to talk about all 30 characters. Are you nuts?
No.
And I typically, like, I like hoovering for stuff too. I think just the literally pushing up against the edge of everything, things like that, just kind of got to me.
A little bit.
I liked it when the puzzle was, I can see the item and I have to figure out how to get there. You know, that was good. The other parts are a little bit kind of frustrating to me. There's like a lot of little things that like are almost there for me in this mechanically. Like mechanically, I generally like it. You know, but there are some things that were, could have been, you know, good plus as opposed to merely good for me, I guess. The style stuff is worth talking about, here, before, and then tone stuff, you know, so the visual style of this, is very purposely kind of off-putting, here. It is like, SNES style pixel art, basically, with ugly little goblins. Everyone is an ugly little man.
An ugly little man wearing ridiculous outfits. And it works, right? You also get the grotesqueries of the Joy Mutants. You know, the design on those is, in, you know, like we said before, incredibly good. There are ones like, there's an art gallery with them where somebody has like posed them.
I really like that.
And put up plaques and stuff.
The one where you're going through and you're seeing it until you find its head, like you're going down in the cave. You know, this like huge flesh snake, you know, until you find,
Henry Wyatt.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. That is really cool. I think the one thing, probably maybe the only thing we're going to be 100% on the same page with, is the soundtrack. The soundtrack absolutely fucks. It is a combination of legitimately like really skillful, you know, beautiful compositions, and then just really, really hooky, something that I like to call umama appeal from the Tim and Eric sketch umama, where they just start saying umama and they loop it, and then they add a little music to it, and it has this kind of compulsive energy. Tons of things have umama appeal. Gwen, the song, you know, we want to give Gwen a lot of freedom here, but if you don't put Work Harder in this, I will be upset. That is my favorite song in the soundtrack, and one of the hardest I laughed in the game is when that popped up. Samples the hated Shenmue too, but it is just an incredible unpleasant song. I really love it.
I want to see how many tracks are on this, because let me just take a look here. 97 tracks on here, a tremendous amount of original music put in, which is you know, huge when you realize that one person did all of the stuff that you are seeing in this.
This is a one person concern, which is pretty impressive.
Wild. Man, just the sample work, the funky stuff, like even when you are doing like otherwise, you know, like it's not music but just ambient, you know, spookscape kind of stuff, when you're fighting a Joy Mutant, or like it's supposed to be like a particularly like emotional scene, or it's a hallucination, all of that is incredibly well done too.
The sound design and soundtrack is impeccable. It's really good.
So even if you
it is going to be to your taste. I don't think that like it's not the recommendation, like it's not a universal recommendation, because there are people who are going to be like, whoa, you know, it's not Hollow Knight, you know, as a soundtrack. You know, you have to be okay with dissonance. As a thing.
On to the writing. Writing is, you know, pretty varied. You know, we can talk about the ways that that goes. You know, this is likely not going to be to your taste, depending on how much you can tolerate tasteless or bleak things. You know, for me, this falls into like kind of the same bucket as Possession, if that makes any sense. Like, this is not showing, you know, and neither of these works show anything that is redeeming about humanity, really. Like, it is just an expression of, you know, an extreme, right? It is, you know, intended to be, you know, very aesthetic and very kind of forceful, you know, to a long end. And that's not going to be for everybody. It's opinionated.
To the best with, if I put on my, like, giving this the benefit of the doubt hat, that's how I see it, where mm-hmm. this is a meditation on, like, nihilism, mm-hmm. you know, and things being shitty, like, how shitty can things be? And let's just present it. Mm-hmm. I don't think of this the same way as Possession, because I don't think it is nearly as artful. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's saying anything with it. Yeah. I think that the concept of this game is just, wouldn't it suck if everything sucked? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's teenage. And it is, it's something I think is better. You know, I'm not saying that, like, you have to, you know, if you disagree, I'm just being honest about my response to it. I'm not saying anything about people who disagree with this. Like, it is a work that honorable people can differ on, because it's complicated, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no right answer to this, but it's something that is better expressed in, like, a song than a game trilogy, I think, mm-hmm. of something where it's like, compare it with, like, Pathologic.
Okay.
I felt like there was human truth in Pathologic.
Yes.
I don't feel like there's human truth in this. Mm-hmm. The things this is saying about people are all untrue and exaggerated just to be as bad as possible. Mm-hmm. And I'm not somebody who likes cheerful stuff. I'm not somebody who wants an uplifting message. Yeah. You know, I don't want that. But just, like, hey, it's been less than a generation. Every man is a homicidal rapist. Every single, you know, if you do drugs, your children will do drugs. If you are an abuser, your children will be abusers. There is no escape from the cycle of violence. Mm-hmm. Is kind of an awful thing to, like, there's a way to appreciate this that isn't didactic, which is my sympathetic hat, which is just, like, it's an experiment. What if things were that bad? And I'm like, sure, what if? You know, I don't know what comes after that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what artistic value there is mm-hmm. in doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, the value could possibly just be jokes, pushing things into an extreme, you know, into these extreme conditions and setting up this world the way that it is in order to establish the tone that it has, where the particular kind of absurd humor that is on display here, you know, is going to function. Right. It doesn't have to be, you know, it's not that this kind of humor can only function in that kind of nihilistic environment, but, like, it is a choice to put it there.
It is, but the game is also having its cake and eating it too with that, because, like, it is trying to say something there. Mm-hmm. This is batting, like, you know, this wants to touch your heart, mm-hmm. you know, and the trilogy of it. If you look at the game before this and the game after this, which I didn't play, but I read a lot about, because I was trying to mm-hmm. figure out whether this was setting up for something, basically, mm-hmm. Are less jokey, you know, mm-hmm. Significantly less jokey and more serious. Yeah. About this stuff. I don't believe that the creator is just doing this to make jokes. I think that, and if you read about the creation, like, the creator's partner had an abusive father, mm-hmm. and this is what they were doing with that. And I'm like, what a profound disrespect to your partner, to just be like, you know, this dude sure is monstrous. Sometimes dads are monstrous. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a thing where there's a metaphor for this, where, like, it is a true thing that sometimes somebody will see somebody who is the victim of abuse and see that redeeming that person as their path of redemption. Mm-hmm. That is a true thing that happens.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the metaphor for this. They should let, you know, we should let Buddy make her own choices. And mm-hmm. it is a self-serving thing to try to help. That's a very cynical message, but it's a message, right? Mm-hmm. The way that ties to the actual plot is really bad to me. Okay. The super scientist, like, super soldier drug, the one woman repopulation of the world through a pregnancy rape mare, like, all of this stuff is fucking dumb, and mm-hmm. it's serious. You know, there are a lot of jokes in this, but, like, the end of it is dead serious. Like, there are parts mm-hmm. of this that are dead serious. Mm-hmm. You know, the sequel is dead serious. The prequel is, like, the bleakest thing, like, the most serious thing that you could ever possibly do.
Yeah, I've not played the prequel, nor do I really intend to, because it seems like too much of a bummer.
It sounds gross, you know? So the whole thing just ends up feeling like, you know, how nasty can we make everyone, and to what end? And there's mm-hmm. no to what end.
No.
You know, it's I don't need everything to have a lesson. That's mm-hmm. that's not what I'm asking for. But I question the art of just making, you know, what if everyone is as bad as they ever possibly could be, and there's no mm-hmm. hope for redemption. You can never grow.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah. I don't know what is different about me, or, you know, well, I know what's different about my experience to where this does not, you know, hit a sensitivity for me. Right. I do not intend to be disrespectful by enjoying this the way that I do, or trying to enjoy it non-didactically. Right. And, you know, seeing the, you know, kind of appreciating the tonality of it. I'm not necessarily coming to it for a lesson. So I am not, you know, responding to when it is making overtures towards trying to, you know, convey something of meaning. Right.
The lesson is kind of like the wrong, like, it's more just like human truth, right? Like, what is it revealing about people more than a lesson? Like, you look at something like, you know, like Pathologic, which is equally bleak to this. But it is, there's human truth in it. Yeah. There's humanity in it. I can't see any humanity in this.
Yeah.
That is what I'm reacting to.
There's a statement that the creator, Jorgensen, put out when the definitive edition came out, kind of talking about some changes, some very, you know, very needed changes to certain scenes in this. But also kind of underlining the fact that the core of the game, to his mind, was untouched. And I've got a note here about this, but talking about, this is a game about people playing pretend. You know, and that is more about like the general setting and the general tone and the way people have like chosen to cope with this. But talking about like every, you know, in this extreme situation without hope of reproduction or redemption, you know, where men are just, you know, free to be the most extreme version of what they can. It's either violent delusion or a complete break into fantasy. You know, and becoming these kind of heightened characters, and what is, you know, what is the refuge that is being depicted in this, right? It can be, you know, you can say like, hey, the story of Brad doesn't have a lot to do with this, but that I think is more speaking to like what is being, you know,
yeah,
what is being said about the, about the world and about the, you know, about the people in it, you know, the gangs, the wrestling, the, you know, just people who are kind of going to these extremes. And I can see that here, like that does resonate with me. And that is data about kind of some intention, you know, because that is, you know, an author's statement on their work as they were thinking about ways that they changed it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that being the intent. I still just kind of think at the end of that, like reading that, like, so what? You know, like there are different ways people could, you know, could act in this. What if we exaggerated them to an absolutely, you know, absurd degree in both directions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's weird because the wrestling stuff, the, you know, the football team, those things where it's like people are going to play, that feels fine because it's not playing with live ammo.
Yeah.
You know, it can't touch the real world because that actually is absurd. Mm-hmm. But turning everyone, you know, you just having a companion who's like, yeah, once we find your daughter, I'm going to get her.
Yeah.
You know, I want a piece. And it's like, well, it reminds me a little bit of 28 Days Later. You know, I talked about this before. That movie at the end of it, you know, I like that movie a lot. Mm-hmm. At the end of it, though, they find the military and it's been 28 days and the military are all raving rape maniacs now. Because it's been a month without pussy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's nuts. You know, because like, first of all, if you can't do a month, you know, hey, were you even a teenage boy? you know, but also secondly, like it's just cartoonish. It's cartoonishly evil in a way that butts up against real life stuff. I'm not saying that men don't rape or that men in this scenario wouldn't. I'm saying that everyone doing it and it being treated as casually is like grody. It's unsavory. Like there are different ways this game wants to be unsavory. That is unsavory in a way that I think doesn't work.
It's worth saying for anybody listening to this out of context, this is not a pro sexual assault game. I just want to be completely unambiguous about that, because if we decided to play this game, you know, a game that glorified
and not
that
fear
in
and
any
hunger.
Way
yeah
well I mean
our problem with fear and hunger was it didn't go far enough.
I'm being like super serious about this. If you know, if this game, you know, came out in a like extremely bad way, which I think it sounds a little bit like we're saying it does, we wouldn't cover it. Right. There is shade in the way that this is here. It's not everybody. Like it's, you know, some of your party members, but it is these gangs and they are being shown as being, you know, reprehensible. Like this is a terrible thing. It's indictable. is what it is. So, you know, just as we're elaborating on the tone here and the ways that it may have, you know, missteps, understand, you know, we need to be precise about specifically what it is saying. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, you're correct. I didn't mean to paint with that broad of a brush. This game is not, it's not everyone. It's just a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think the fact that it does include your companions, people you're willing to party with who are otherwise just jokes, is weird. Yeah. Like, that is where that dissonance kind of lies for me. And dissonance is too strong a word, like failed execution or execution to no end of this. You know, there are a couple of like outright jokes around it, which I don't care for. I know that you're not going to bat for those either. But generally that is not the overall tone, and I'm not trying to present it as such. If anyone's listening to this as service, my point is not to mischaracterize this game. My point is to wrestle with a thing that made me feel very frustrated with the artfulness of this. And part of that is, you're right, it is the background that I have, right? Like a story about how the children of addicts will become addicts no matter what. No, they don't.
Nope.
You know, like I'll tell you, they don't.
Not true.
Just not true, and kind of irresponsible to make a game about that, you know, a little bit where that's true. Like, what if it were true? Yeah, good point. What if it were?
We'll talk about a scene that kind of undercuts that to a degree when we get there. You know, but in Brad's particular case, his failure in this, that being presented as, being presented by the bulk of the text, the majority of it as being determinative just because of the conditions under which he grew up, takes a lot of power away from him. And also, you know, for some people in their read of this, makes them makes them a little bit too forgiving of him. There are people who root for Brad in this, and I cannot understand it. Just like I can't understand the people who root for Joel. Right.
It's very Last of Us in that respect, except I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring up the Last of Us thing. I would be curious if the Last of Us was at all inspired by this, because it feels very similar in that respect. Brad, at certain points, I think that is where the dissonance between what this is a metaphor for and what's happening kind of breaks down, because rooting for Brad, like, Brad is very monstrous in this. Him wanting Buddy not to make an attempt to repopulate the earth entirely through her womb is not misguided.
No,
because that's nonsense. But it's treated, everyone in the world is like, no, Brad, you're wrong. She is the only hope. And it's just dumb. Like, there is some shade to it. The other thing that really colors my feeling about this, like, if you are a child of an addict, you'll become an addict, is reading about the sequel where Buddy also becomes a joy addict and does atrocities. This is a cycle of three characters, three generations, essentially, all of which are abusive drug addicts because their parents were.
Yeah.
You know, and like, again, where are you going with that, man? You know, what's the truth you're getting to with this?
Yeah.
You know, and it's too, I can be cynical, and I don't think the world's great, but when you overplay your hand with how ungreat the world is, I don't think you really do it a service. I think there's a way that this is disrespectful to real problems and real struggles that people have by eliding them completely.
Yeah.
And making it a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. And, you know, my response to that as somebody who has not, you know, who does not have that past, is I agree with that. And that falls into, you know, like, you are under no obligation to like this.
You had the opportunity to say the funniest thing in the world, which was, my experience with somebody who doesn't have that past is that I'm just waiting for you to go, man. I'm just waiting for you to start getting into coke.
Jesus, no. To say the funniest thing or the most friendship ending thing.
I would have laughed. You never know, though. There's a 50% chance. But yeah, the idea of me just being on a timer and then, like, at 55, I'm going to get real into cocaine and neglect.
Just gonna get pill-pilled.
Absolutely. You know what? My old man had a point. Let's get some DUIs under my belt, and then I was gonna say something real bleak that I didn't want to say. I also can admit, like, I'm bringing my past to this, but also I don't want to discount that too much because I exist.
And you're You know, you don't even, it's a character thing, like that matters, you know.
Yeah, I'm not alone in this, you know. These are I am the kind of person I think that the creator could have used more care in considering.
Yes,
you know, which weirdly makes this such a weird substitution for Cruelty Squad, right? Mm-hmm. Because I was also the problem child in that. Like, I don't use negative language. I was also the person who was negatively affected by the choices made by that dev.
Yes,
yeah. You know, if there's a message to this. So the slot, I guess.
Yeah,
is be fucking more careful.
I was gonna say Gary should stop being such a squeaky wheel, but okay.
Yeah. I should be such, you know, just take your Coke and shut up. You know, just get out your little mirror and go to town.
I was gonna say.
No, I know. Like, just, you know, you can say somebody's cranky. Gary needs a Cokey. Jeez. Man, you gotta get some ludes to balance that out. Snortsky. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm definitely coming at this with an agenda about that stuff. And I'm sensitive about being portrayed as somebody who wants Tender Frog games where everyone, there's always hope and you get over stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I just think the inevitability of it, and part of that is informed by the genre, right? This is a console RPG. That means no choice. You know, you get choices of companions you leave and stuff, but the plot is the plot. Yep. So part of it just being that as an inevitable rail feels bad to me.
Yeah, you cannot respond to it. The character's input on the situation does not necessarily change the way the things go.
Yes.
You know, on that fulcrum of whether you go joyless or not, the fact that it turns out, you know,
you learn about the super scientist who created the mad lab, created the super drug. When I watched that on YouTube, I got frustrated because I was like, this is the revelation. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm not a monolith for children of neglect and addiction and stuff. There are people who are children of abuse who feel themselves very seen by this game and probably have a very different reaction to it. I am done with hopelessness as a construct. Like this. So
no,
unless it's like a cosmic thing. If it's humanity, you can overcome it. If it's if it's not a lathotep, you can't.
Let's talk about the development.
So this is developed almost entirely by one person, Adam Jorgensen, which you mentioned. The first game of this is called Lisa the First. It's a Yume Nikki kind of RPG maker horror game about a woman named Lisa trying to cope psychologically with her father's sexual and verbal and physical abuse.
Yes. It seems like the darkest thing imaginable. I have no desire to play it.
I read a synopsis of it just because, again, I was trying to see if this was a straight putt with the cycle of, you know, abuse being inescapable as it is. It's even hard to kind of read about. I do not like it. It seems gross.
This picks up with you're playing as Lisa's brother. May be confusing as to why this is called Lisa when nobody is named Lisa in it, but Brad is Lisa's brother, her older brother, you're suffering the effects of the abuse yourself, and also trying to cope with guilt over, you know, basically survivor's guilt, what happened, and also some of your complicity in it.
There's a lot of Brad is not in very much in the third game, at least the Joyful. There are flashbacks to his childhood, which again take away that agency. Brad did not choose to be an addict or to participate or be complicit in Lisa's abuse. Brad was forced to.
Yes.
By a character who, at the end of this, they're like, no, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Fuck me. This is all inspired by a relationship that Jorgensen had early in his life with his partner, is what I read. His partner had an abusive parent.
Yes.
So this is his meditation on that, is my understanding. In terms of small numbers, this got kickstarted in 2013, getting $16,000 versus a $7,000 goal. That seems like such small potatoes for a game that has this big of a footprint. That is a crazy small budget and just a very modest success.
I snorted when I saw those numbers because there is so much sweat in this.
The amount of work is insane. This is a huge effort.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I don't even know if now, like this many years later with the definitive edition, if that sweat has been repaid. No clue. The original plan for this was to be an unrelated game to the first one. It was going to be called The Last Matador. But the connections to Lisa the First, then just called Lisa, were added late in development as he saw some opportunities to connect it.
Yeah. The Last Matador, it really does feel like not connecting those things would have made this the post-apocalyptic Warlord Goof Fest.
Yes.
Without the stuff. I might have liked that version a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's hard to say, though.
Same. Props. Yeah.
Yeah. Jorgensen states Earthbound and Yuminiki as primary inspirations, of course. But other things that he loves creep their way into this, specifically martial arts and professional wrestling. He is a martial artist. There are a lot of in-jokes about professional wrestling and martial arts that I did not get. Those are two things I do not give a shit about. Could not give less of a shit about.
At the very least, a lot of it was like stuff from the 80s that I just have absorbed in just through cultural osmosis. So like there's an enemy who's a Power Rangers villain in this called Blake the Snake. Obviously, yeah. I know who Jake the Snake is.
Sure.
There's a very clear who's the guy who goes woo Ric Flair. Clear Ric Flair. There's some of that, like the pro wrestling references are old enough that at least I caught some of them.
One of the things I like about this game is that it's taking things I actively have some disdain for, like martial arts, professional wrestling, and Sentai, and making funny jokes about them.
Yes,
like the Sentai scenes are very funny, even though I could not give less of a shit for Sentai. I don't like Sentai. I don't think it's cool. But I think that those jokes are really good.
Yes. Like a lot of Kickstarter projects, development on this happened in the open. And there were lots of fundamental changes throughout. For example, Brad was initially going to be kind of traveling and fighting alongside his childhood friends who factor into the story, but are working athwart him, except for the one who just outright dies at the beginning. But you're going to be going for revenge is what it was going to be.
Yes. So Lisa the Painful, released to mostly positive reviews, became a cult hit. We covered it way back in the day on Comrade. I think we got through the first act back then when we talked about it.
Yeah.
Lisa the Joyful is the sequel to this, almost like a DLC. Released in 2015, picks up immediately after where you play Buddy on her quest to be addicted and do atrocities.
Yes.
That wraps up a lot more of the lore stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know about the evil scientist who ended the world, you get to find out more about it then.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
A definitive edition of the game of The Painful and The Joyful was released recently in 2023, adding some difficulty modes, both harder and easier, some bonus content, and also those aforementioned campfire scenes where you get more dialogue with your party members if they are in your, in your active party.
And the most mechanically, relevant thing it adds is trickle XP, team XP for characters. So previously you would get characters, they'd be low level, or you'd have a character die and you had to retrain people. There are not a lot of random encounters in this, but they do have one of the wrestling things is specifically was designed for training up characters. You don't need to do that anymore, which thank God. And why would you put that there in the first place? We invented the XP egg a long time ago.
I don't remember that being an issue when I played it on stream back in the day, but I never played
without it. This is just from reading, the idea added that. So.
No, it's good. Like that's there's no reason not to do the trickle XP. I'm just trying to recall, think back, because I have played both versions. I can't speak to one feeling better than the other.
Yeah. I appreciate not having to grind up in the wrestling ring because I like the battle system in this, but I wasn't about
clamoring for more. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't about to do more of it than the game asked really, this is a real minor point, and I'll just kick myself if I didn't say it. I wanted to ask you this one thing I wanted from this game, and it's not a huge deal. This is like firmly in the tiny nitpick. Would you feel like this game was ruined if enemies had health bars?
Nope.
Okay, I really wanted that, because one of the things about having all unique enemies is there's no readability to an enemy. You can't tell how difficult they're going to be, which is, again, it's one of those harshness breakers that's hit.
Yeah.
And I understand the intention behind that, but when you couple that with resources being so scarce, I need to have an idea, at least be able to make a reasoned guess whether I need to be using resources on an enemy, and you can't, because every enemy is unique. Other than Joy Mutants, you don't know how hard someone's going to be. And you don't have an idea of their health pool going into it. I really wish that was part of the game. And again, make it a character skill if you want to make it, you want some privation. Yes. Make it something Nern can do or something like that. I don't know where else to put that. I just was missing that because not knowing how much of myself I had to give to a fight in any individual part was a little bit frustrating. And this is not unique to Lisa. This happens all the time in video games, the idea, the equivalent of like a red eye knight or, you know, something that, that showed me, no, this guy can actually backbreak my characters and kill them.
I don't think that would hurt things at all. And it's also something you could tell that they knew that they needed in some instances, like especially damaged spongy bosses. They would have visual indicators about how far along you were.
Parts
of them would crack or they would degrade. Yeah, they would take dino damage. It would even be okay if like that was the way that they decided to depict it, as opposed to having a like having a straight up meter. Having a meter would be A, more readable, and B, less work.
They might not like it because it's gamey.
But
not everything does that degradation.
Yes.
You know? So you'll run into a rando at some point, some random guy, not a capital R rando, but like a rando, and it's like, oh shit, like I should have been using firebombs from the beginning on this guy. He was firebomb worthy, but I had no idea because he looks just like a guy. I would have fixed that. That's all. Like it's, again, not a huge deal. It's just something I thought of when playing it. On that weird note, that's highly specific note, and the generalities of this episode, I think a lot of the good discussion is going to come in the back half of this. Not saying that as a commercial, just saying that, like, you know, us actually articulating these points, where the thing is, and, you know, recounting these jokes and stuff are going to happen in the back half. So, you know, if you're hearing this, why not budget $5, head on over to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and get the whole shebang.
By the whole shebang, the whole shebang is $10.
Shebang after shebang after shebang after shebang after shebang.
Shebangs Mattingly.
God,
I just I like playing this game just gets me in the mood to name more Lisa the characters.
It's pretty fun as a convention.
That is the end of the public facing portion of this episode. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, like Gary said. If you have thoughts on any of the games that we covered this month, Mystical Ninja 64, Dragon Quest 4, or Lisa the Painful, it is too late for that. It is too late for us all. Mankind is inherently flawed and must be wiped off the face of the earth. However, it is not too late for September's games.
Yes, which are Aria of Sorrow, Castlevania Aria of Sorrow, to be specific, the Pokemon Trading Card Game, and Doom Eternal.
For Pokemon Trading Card Game, that is now available. God, I love the WAF effect sometimes. That was just recently made available on Switch Online. So it is easier than ever.
There's so few Game Boy Color games on there, and they chose that one. Kudos.
Bravo.
You know, put in the non-translated version of Rhythm Heaven, please. On GBA.
And also thank you.
Please and thank you.
But if you have thoughts on September's games, the deadline is September the 15th. Go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in. If you have thoughts about multiple games, please separate them into multiple responses.
Yes. Next week we'll be back with the Dispatch, where we will be announcing Spooktober. Scary October.
We've already made the choice for what we're gonna do there. It's a good month, man.
It'll be fun. We got a good rest of the year. There's nothing the rest of this year that I am not interested in that we've talked about or have planned to do. It is a killer 2023. Big thanks to Gwen, our producer. We'll see you next week.
We will. Bye-bye.